Welcome back to Channel 9 Live. I'm Robert Hess. Joining me today are some important people from 3M. We have...
Greetings. My name is Brian Brooks. I work in 3M's corporate research labs with a team of visual neuroscientists, believe it or not.
My name is Eric Welch. I'm a software engineer, and I work also in 3M's corporate research lab.
Now, Brian, you explained earlier you work with wet computers.
Yeah, that my background is actually the group that I come from. We have PhDs in neuroscience, cognitive science, computer science, where we're interested in neural computation.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, 3M is a long-time company. It's been doing an awful lot of work from different types of tapes to various other sorts of things. And right now your focus is on images, right?
Yeah, it turns out that actually 3M is pretty much one of the best world-class companies at light management. And we've got to the point where we're so good at managing light with like nanomaterials and that sort of thing that actually having people that know what happens to light after it strikes your retina has become an actual important thing. And so we do things like build models of how the visual system processes images that fall on the retina.
So
in order to optimize it.
The science of neurological optics, essentially.
Yeah, in a way, that you coined a term.
Okay. Now, you explained it earlier, before we came on the stage, that the whole idea is taking a look at an image and understanding how the human mind is going to interpret that image and figure out where it's going to scan to first. How does that fall into what you've been studying prior to coming to 3M?
Well, it turns out that there's already been a couple of Nobel Prizes won in visual neuroscience, and there'll be more.
And you're going to get one of them, right?
Oh, I actually scheduled it already. So,
spent the money.
Yeah, exactly. It turns out that there's not a supercomputer on the planet that can outperform the human visual system of a 2-year-old at almost any visual task.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a fundamental. That's why we don't have computers that are able to drive our cars for us or clean up after us and that sort of thing. It's because the human visual system actually is able to do things that computer scientists can't figure out how to get a computer to do. And it turns out that about half of our cortex, the part of our brain that thinks, is involved in vision in one way or another. So we're amazingly visual creatures. In fact, we're all visual geniuses. It's just amazing the computational power of the visual system. However, there are some fundamental limitations to human vision that cause lots of problems in the world. And so that's kind of the area that we're focusing on, and is that whole area of where there's a lot of problems. And I don't know if we can show this little image.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Why don't we
go? See if we can bring that up.
This image? Oh, I know this image.
You want to do the slide deck then?
That one.
All right.
Yep. So when we look out in the world, it kind of looks like you're seeing everything. But go to the next slide. This is as good as it gets. If you're looking at this place, this is what gets sent to the brain. So if you just imagine all of the billions of dollars that are spent trying to get visual content out there in the world, and most of it, unless it falls right in the center of the eye, mm-hmm. It's all for naught.
Now, I'm not sure if the people watching this on the web can actually see this completely, but if you look at the image now, you've got this set of roses here in the very center that is a circle around the roses that is fairly clear, and then another circle outside of that that is less clear, another circle outside of that that's less clear. So you have these conical sections that the
yes.
mind is actually taking and expanding upon and saying, I don't need to quite pay as much attention to this because that's not where my attention is focused at.
Yeah, you got it. In fact, of that half of your cortex, the part of your brain that thinks, half of that brain tissue is focused right there. That's it. And so if you just think about it.
So half of the optic work is done on that dime-sized
yes,
piece of picture.
Pretty much if you hold your thumb up, it's what covers the world in your thumb, about 2.33 degrees of visual angle. Half of your cortex that does vision is allocated, the neural tissue is to that. So it's like really important if you really want people to process what you're hoping they'll process to get their brains to focus just on that little spot. Mm-hmm. Make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and what you're doing with 3M now is helping people understand the processing of actual photographs or advertisements or something like that.
Yeah.
And help them figure out where people are going to look at when.
Yep.
So they can plan their image projections, their image processing physically in a better way for the human mind.
Yeah, you got it. And in fact, mind if I just take this
sure.
for a second?
Go ahead.
he didn't know I was going to do that.
The scientist has a PC.
Exactly. So check this out. You're going to see two images flash back and forth. There's something different between these two versions.
Okay.
Just see how long it takes you to find what it is that's changing between these two versions.
Well, his shoes are untied in one of them.
Oh. No. Got to get you in the lab. So as you're looking, I'll talk and say that if I would have pointed this out to you ahead of time and asked how long do you think it would take you to find that, most people say maybe a second and a half or so. But on average, it takes people 45 seconds to a minute to see what's changing. So I'll give you a hint. You wouldn't want to get on this plane if this thing had fallen off or was missing.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So there it is. It's the airplane engine right there.
Yep.
And so let's just do one more really quick for fun. Because it's really fun, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, see, look at the people, his arm didn't get chopped off between one another. Statue looks in the same place.
I'll give you a little hint. I'll even move the cursor over there.
Right there. The trees,
yeah. The trees are missing at the time. And it's actually a pretty big luminance contrast difference. So notice, now watch what happens when we show this. Now it's almost impossible not to see that the airplane's missing half the engine's missing on that other image.
Yep.
So the problem is we humans are poor at predicting what it is that other people would visually process if they were exposed to it for the first time. And this causes problems, large-scale problems in the world. Tens of thousands of people are struck by cars every year, and the driver reports not even knowing that the person was there in the road till half the time till after the car has struck them. But if you back up and point out that same person to that same driver would say, of course I see that person. And in fact, anybody who doesn't see them and runs into them is negligent.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so hard to predict what people will see, and that causes safety problems in other markets
or
that 3M plays in.
Pilots taking off with planes without engines.
Or in Minneapolis, flying over the top of Minneapolis and not stopping. So the deal is that if you're going to be putting content out there in the world, it's just so hard to know what it is that people actually visually select. And right now, we're at a perfect time to throw science at solving that problem. And that's because in science, it's a scientific question of how the visual system selects some things for processing and discards the rest of things. So what do? As scientists, we build computational models that we posit do the same thing as the real human visual system. And then we bring people into the lab, use eye tracking, see if humans do the same thing with their eyes as our computational models do. And so now we're bringing this kind of core predictive modeling capability to market in a web application. So you can come to 3m.com/VAS, V-A-S, and upload images.
And get them processed.
And get them processed and see what people are likely to see.
So now that we understand the gist of what this session will be about, image processing, understanding human neurology, and how it does image processing optically, you can now tweet now the questions you might have for either Brian or Eric about image processing problems you might be having, or questions neurologically or scientific, or maybe some psychological questions to a limited extent.
If you have neurological problems, bring them on.
Yeah. So, I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking that at one level, this is something that can maybe be described mathematically through algorithms, stuff like that. On the other side, there are some psychological aspects associated with how we actually look at images.
Yep.
I mean, this isn't just a camera with very dedicated focal features,
yep,
but it's actually the human mind,
yep,
looking at images based upon previous experiences.
You bet.
And anticipated experiences.
You bet. That's actually I'm really glad you brought that up. That's a great point, because notice that what you're talking about as far as what your experiences are and what you might care about, that implies first that you've already at least seen what's there. Because you have to at least extract the basic image components before you can decide to focus on things. And so what we're modeling is that first selection part in the first place, so that you can actually, if something breaks through to your visual system, you can then focus attention on those regions. It's not definitively what people will stare at after they've already noticed it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so what you're providing there with 3M with this website is the ability to upload images and provide some sort of cognitive recognition of the processing that's going to go on there. Mm-hmm. Can we take a look at what that looks like a bit?
Certainly. I'll let somebody who actually writes in like silicone code show you a couple things.
So we took all this great science that Brian and the other scientists at 3M, and our challenge was to take that and make it consumable in a web application using, and we use Microsoft technologies and Azure, and that's why we're here today. But I'll just run you a quick through so you can see what the web app looks like. From our homepage here, you can sign up, you can either sign up for an account or sign in if you already have one. It takes you through to our web application. I'm going to jump past the sign-in process, and actually it'll take you to our portfolio, which is simply a list of files that you've uploaded. So you, if I want to add more files here, I click on this image to upload new images.
So these would have been images that I would have uploaded to my account on
sure.
your system.
Yep, we uploaded these images right before we came on. Only better. we've taken the science and all the mad science that Ryan's talked about here, very high-level computational image processing, and we've made it consumable here in a web application. So yeah, you start by just simply uploading an image. But from there, the analysis you can do is quite complex, as you gathered from talking to Brian here. So Brian, why don't you talk about what we have here. What we have here is an image that we've uploaded.
Sure. Yeah, so this is an image. You want me to just for the heck
sure.
of it all? Yeah, thanks. Again, he's letting me touch the computer.
Look
so,
out.
And so here's what you wonder. Is if you're flipping through this in a magazine, like an in-flight magazine, for example, what in the first few fixations is likely to catch your eye? Well, first of all, it turns out that in order to predict that, the best way to do it in making sure that it's accurate as possible is it turns out the human visual system cares a little bit more about things that are face-like than things that aren't face-like. We're actually born that way.
So like the Channel 9 guy.
That Channel 9 guy, it turns out like an infant, probably two hours out of the womb, would track that more than something that's just as bright and just the same colors if it wasn't the same face. So what we do is you're able to mark up and note where the faces are in the image, and then text too. That matters also. Then you can analyze the image.
So right now what you're doing, you're letting the user pre-identify
yes.
some areas of the screen. So, but if this is my ad,
yep.
I'm going to know that I designed this ad. I know what's important in this ad,
yep.
and so I'm going to take and you know pick on the text. I'm actually kind of surprised you didn't highlight your logo down there because hey, my logo, man, that's important. And so people are always going to take zip right to that logo because it's going to mean so much to them.
Yep.
So, how does that affect things? I'm loading the deck, aren't I?
That you know, if you were to mark up things like that, you would be loading the deck. You're exactly right. So that's the point where you want to just give the model an accurate representation of what's going to fall on the retina. And we didn't mark up the 3M because that's not really textish. It's more of a logo, actually. And so that's not going to grab attention. The fact that it's red and lots of luminance contrast, that'll matter. But the fact that this is a face, that's just an objective fact that the visual system cares about. So then you can mark these things up. By the way, pretty soon we'll have some help with that. And then you can see, where are the places that are the most likely to grab visual attention. And you can get it in the form of a heat map that shows how robust regions are. And then you can also get it in terms of regions. So what this is saying is, this is number one right here.
So the stewardess's face is going to be number one.
Yep, right there. And then number two, this text over here. And it's both because of the text and because there's a lot of luminance contrast between the text and the background. And you can then see, and lo and behold, the 3M is only number four, which maybe is good. The marketer might actually say, that's the way we should be. We want people to see 3M after they've gone through and seen the things we want them to care about. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Cool.
And then it's taking on the laptops at the bottom, it's picking out first the ones that actually have things on the screen, and
yep.
the one that didn't have anything on the screen, it didn't even pick at all.
Yeah, yep, and it exactly, you got it.
So now from that, if I was putting this ad together and I wanted to make some modification based upon this analysis, would I then decide to take and put some stuff on that laptop that doesn't have stuff on it? Or if I said, gee, maybe I'm not wanting them to draw that quick attention to the laptops. There's other things I want to pay attention to. I would modify something else. Maybe I want to draw more attention to the picture itself. Maybe put a laptop in the guy's hands with something on the screen.
There we go. So that's exactly what this thing is for. It's for, you know, whenever somebody's designing content generally, they have visual goals in mind, things they want people to see most important. And what this does is it gives you feedback on whether you're likely to achieve those visual goals so that you can make changes. So yeah, one could be, and the marketer might actually want it this way, who knows, but the marketer might have wanted to have a person sitting there with a face near it, so you'd be more likely to go over there. But maybe they wanted it to be, read this first and then see the details. Mm-hmm. It's up to them. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the more information you can give the people preparing the images, the better those images can be for actually producing the end result that they're wanting to get. Looks like a couple Twitter questions here from Blobomatic. Do you use hierarchical temporal memory for predicting human visual processing?
We actually, what we're doing right now is actually, there's not a memory component to it. It's actually just what we would call, almost what's called bottom-up visual processing. So we don't actually need to model memory into the process. There are hierarchical components to the image processing algorithms, but they're more hard-coded up front. They don't have to do with any of the memory components.
Because if you're going to focus on the memory components, you'd actually maybe more have to have an ad campaign per se, and take and have the memory from one ad to the next, whether they're picking up between them, as well as understand more about the particular individual looking at it, what is their historical reference associated to it. Which could also even get into more of an ethnic sort of thing. How do people in Europe focus on images different than do in America versus people in South America or something like that?
And that's actually, you know, maybe someday, because the deal is that neuroscience has focused so heavily on human vision that we know so much about that. Memory, we know quite a bit about neurologically, but the actual computations to be able to predict the details of people's long-term memory, we're not there yet. So human vision, lots of research, lots of into the computations. We can't really integrate the memory representations. That's all after the fact.
Right, right. Just being getting more into the Harry Seldon world from the Foundation Empire, something like that.
Yes.
Let's go with another question from Twitter. And if you also want to take and send a question on Twitter, it's just at CH9Live, and we'll take and hopefully get to them before the show is over. Andre Abrantes asks, do you use recognition pattern algorithm made in C#? So I guess, Eric, this is more of a question for you then.
The algorithm we're using right now is in unmanaged C++ code, and there's actually...
Unmanaged?
Well,
self-organizing.
This is computationally intense stuff that we're doing here, and it actually has taken quite a bit of research and work to get it to where it can respond quickly enough. And that's been one of our biggest challenges, to take a very complex algorithm and implement it. So... a lot of the delivery of this application is in C#, .NET technology, but the low-level services are in unmanaged C++ code.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that this brings up an issue, because we'd have a separation between you two. Brian, again, you're focused more on the wet computer, the brain and stuff like that, which doesn't think in C#, for the most part.
His does.
And so when you're thinking about this processing, you might be coming up with some mathematical equations that can take and simulate the way the brain is going to be thinking about certain things. But definitely it's not computer programming.
Right.
And then, Eric, you now have to take a look at these mathematical equations and psychological analysis and stuff like that, and from that turn those into computer programs to take and try to simulate that sort of stuff.
Right.
Is it a Chinese wall between the two guys? Do you guys collaborate an awful lot? You bounce things back and forth, or how does that work?
I think it all plays together. Part of what Brian's doing is the research, but it boils down to how can we implement this in a way that runs efficiently? And I think we're to a point now where we've got a code base where we can effectively tweak the algorithm and make improvements and enhancements that Brian envisions. But we can do it in the code base that we have now. But it did take a lot of work to get to where we have an efficient code base that can crank out these analysis.
You know, at first, there were some times when I would be and my colleagues would be surprised that something, you know, we'd say, well, these things look similar with respect to difficulty of implementation, but the team would say, oh, that one really hard, that one really easy. But when you work together enough, pretty soon you just get a feel for what's going to be hard and what's going to be easy. And we're still not right a lot of the time, us neuroscience people, but, you know.
So does that mean you're actually kind of trying to modify your presentation to the computer scientist on what you show them to do based upon your understanding of what they actually can do?
It's more about efficiency. You know, it's pretty crisp in our minds what we need it to do and how it needs to process things as mathematical entities. It's just how do we couch it in a way, or what tweaks can we make in thinking about it to make it easier to implement?
Because mm-hmm. I suppose even translating the concept of optics and brain mm-hmm. interaction into mm-hmm. mathematics mm-hmm. is a big leap forward.
Yes.
Because first you've got to understand, okay, exactly how are we coming. When I look out there, you're telling me I'm only paying attention to that much, but even my peripheral vision, I'm looking at that one camera, I can still see all this stuff. I can't read any of the signs until they go like that.
There you go.
But in my mind, they look like they're just as distinct.
Yes.
And so understanding where those edges lie is a psychological aspect, and you need to take that into a mathematical thing.
Yep. You bet. And in fact, actually, it's just that center is, it's hard to pay attention to things outside of your center. Like if I ask you to pay attention to my hand, but look at my face, or look at my hand, but pay attention to my face, it's kind of hard because our vision naturally does that.
Yeah. You want to jump out to your face and take a look at it. Your hand, take a look at it. We've got another question. This is one we kind of touched on there. Namulo asks, does this change by region? I.e., is North America versus Europe versus Asia? Is that something you're thinking about? Because I can understand how it would make a difference
yeah.
in different regions of the world, but is your equations, are they currently taking advantage of that at all?
What really matters is that, for example, the image, our brains, regardless of where we're from geographically, are almost identical. As far as the visual cortex goes, there aren't going to be cultural differences in core visual cortex things. However, notice text, for example. So text in Chinese might not be text-like to somebody who doesn't know Chinese. So therefore, if you're modeling, if you're predicting what people will see if this was in Chinese, then if I was modeling it for what a North American would see, I wouldn't mark it up in text because that isn't text to somebody in North America. In China, for modeling them, you would want to mark it up. So it's kind of that would be kind of one of the basic.
So for example, let's take this ad for instance. Let's say this was done as a multilingual ad,
mm-hmm.
and so you had a line of Chinese, a line of English, and a line of Russian.
Yes.
I would take and I wouldn't necessarily put them all as text. I may say, okay, this is for the ad campaign, the exact same ad that can be showing in the American airline regions. I'm going to mark the English text as being what's important and
yes.
ignore the Russian and the Chinese, and then move it back and forth and see how that varies things.
Beautiful.
Because there, even the layering, I mean, what comes first, second, and third might be yep. different. And I might actually not just want to have the exact same ad, but move the text around.
You got it. Cool.
Oh, well, okay. we got another question coming in here from Twitter. And again, if you want to take on Twitter any of your questions, it's at CH9Live. Todd Alexander asks, are there any plans to use machine learning to identify the important parts using previously seen images?
You know, we have a pile of plans. And I just, because 3M spends about $1.5 billion on R&D and rounding error on me, I can't go too far into the plans of the future. But let's just say we're very excited about a lot of things that are coming down the pipe.
So this is kind of just the beginning, and you recognize the fact that, you know, first you need to kind of crawl, walk, and run.
You got it.
Once you get the aspect of people understanding the importance of images, processing and understanding the way images are going to be playing out to people, whether it's advertisements or websites or whatever,
yep.
you can then start rolling in other things. I mean, you know, HTML today is like wild stuff you can do on it. I remember, you know, the old HTML 1.0, 2.0 days.
Yep.
I mean, those pages look darn ugly mm-hmm. if we compare them to what we have today. Mm-hmm. It's just evolved from year to year. So, I mean, speaking of websites and stuff, and right now we have a print advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I'm interested in my web page and understand how people are going to react to that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you wanting me to, like, submit the images I'm putting on the web page to you, or a bitmap picture of the website to submit to you, or how would I process that?
Yeah, it needs to be, what you'd want to do right now is save it as, like, a JPEG or a TIFF or something like that, and then upload it mm-hmm. that way. Turns out, soon, you'll be able to actually do video. So if you have components, flash components, or video on there, you could actually upload that and see how visual attention dynamically changes with motion also.
So
and this goes through time.
One question I would like to take and pose to you guys, or request, I guess, is I mean, if someone submits an ad motion with some lady doing the dancing stuff like that, just automatically say they're not going to pay attention to that at all.
Exactly. Or their eye might go there once and only once by accident.
So with websites and stuff and paying attention to images, and motion coming in, does that increase the difficulty? Because I would think a website is going to be different than a print ad. A lot of people talk about the above the fold, below the fold sort of aspects. Does that play into it all? I mean, would I want to take and send you a picture of just what is above the fold and there, how big is the guy's screen? Or
yeah, and that is what's critically important, is that what you give our technology, what you give our model, is representative of what falls on the human retina. So yeah, if something's below the fold, and you want to model what's going to be attended to on this site, it'd be important that you only give the model what it has.
Okay.
So, you bet.
Well, thanks very much, Brian. Now, the website they go to if they want to actually understand the processing better is what?
3m.com/VAS.
Slash VAS.
V as in Victor, A-S.
Okay, well, thanks, Brian. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
For joining us. And thanks to you, audience, for all your Twitters. Stay tuned. More Channel 9 Live coming up after this break.